Welcome to the Real Estate Radio Show,
your ultimate guide to everything real estate.
Whether you're a first-time buyer, a seasoned investor, or thinking about selling, we have the insights you need. Your host, Larry Shackman,
the real estate therapist and a top-producing broker, will break it down weekly.
We'll dive deep into market trends and speak with industry pros about everything from pricing and negotiation strategies and staging tips to financing options and home inspections.
This fast-paced, ever-evolving market doesn't have to be overwhelming. We are here to guide you through it. Today's show is brought to you by TrustedAgentUSA.com. Get your market value, explore your selling options, and choose your closing date. Go to TrustedAgentUSA.com and do real estate your way. You've got options. Licensed in Illinois. Number 475-145-795. Now, let's dive in. Here's Larry.
All right, everybody, welcome back. You are listening to or watching the Real Estate Radio Show. We're being joined today by Patrick Loftus of Loftus Law. Patrick, what's up?
Hey there, how you doing?
We'll get to that in a minute. So we are going to label this show the day after the day after, because we got a lot to talk about in terms of the election, right? What happened and how is that going to affect specifically the real estate market? I mean, bottom line is whoever got elected one way or another, it's going to affect markets, one of them being the real estate market question. First question I have for you, Patrick, is this. So the day after the election, Wednesday, the stock market had a 1,500-point or thereabout run-up, which was the largest run-up probably in the last, I don't know how many months or year maybe. Why, and the reason they said they're so excited is because they're anticipating a great outlook in terms of the economy because Trump's coming into office. And this is not, by the way, about whether you like Trump or whether you like Harris or whoever team you're on. It's just about facts. So why are they so excited about the economy because Trump is coming into office? What am I missing?
Well, I think you saw a couple of things. My knee-jerk reaction to it is that the dogma or the conventional wisdom is that a Republican in the Oval Office is good for business. And I think if you're talking about trading on Wall Street, you would take that conventional wisdom and you would trade on it, right? So Basically, it's kind of a hive mind mentality where it's like, okay, we've got the results in, we've got a guy with an R next to his name in the Oval Office, and so yay business. Now, on the other hand, what you saw in the bond market was that the 10-year Treasury bumped up, which suggests that there are some people who are taking the opposite viewpoint on it, and specifically because a number of the policies that he policies that he discussed in the run-up to the election are pretty obviously inflationary. 20% tariffs, and whether any of these things ever happen is, that's up for speculation, and that's exactly what we're doing. But tariffs are going to be inflationary. If he makes good on his promise to monkey in the business of the Federal Reserve instead of allowing it to be a nonpartisan entity, that can also have effects on inflation. So the very thing that we've been trying to stamp out and have successfully done so over the past 18 to 24 months, there are renewed concerns about it.
Yeah, so let's really drill that down a little more, because I was thinking the same thing that you just articulated. And that is, so the investors are worried about inflation because of tariffs. So as a result of that, the bond market is getting hit. But at the same time, the stock market and indexes exploded. So, and as a result of that bond market, you know, you can expect mortgage rates to start ticking up.
They did. Because they did.
So yeah. The 10-year treasury is what, and bond markets are what mortgage rates are tied to. It really doesn't matter, correct?
Well, yeah. So there's a common misconception that it's the federal funds rate that has some kind of direct or indirect connection to mortgage rates. And to the extent that there's a connection, it's very indirect, because that federal funds rate, it's meant to reverberate throughout the economy in terms of what other interest rates do. Now, as far as mortgage rates, they are, as you just said, more connected to the 10-year treasury. Traditionally speaking, you can expect to see prevailing mortgage rates at between 2% and 3% above what the yield is on the 10-year treasury. Mm-hmm. More recently, it's been closer to that 3% number. The conventional wisdom was always that, hey, it's you know, wherever the 10-year treasury is at, you can generally expect plus 2 are your prevailing mortgage rates. Over the past couple of years, with the inflation that we were having and that we are now not having anymore, it's been closer to 3. So they're essentially the folks who have influence on this, the investors, the lenders, so on and so forth, have said we have to price in additional risk. And for whatever reason.
Yeah, so here's the issue with that, the way I'm looking at it. So the first immediate impact of even the thought of tariffs is that you're seeing the bond market hit and you're seeing mortgage rates go up. And some people are saying they could go up to 8%. So we're seeing Wall Street, you know, really, you know, doing well, 1,500 point bump up to 43,000 plus, but yet Main Street is going to get hit with higher mortgage rates as a result of just the fear of potential tariffs, which will be a disaster on this country.
Well, I think so. You know, my take on my non-expert take on, you know, what happened on Wall Street yesterday is, you know, it was a sugar high. It was a shot of, you know,
I don't get
whatever.
It.
Well, it's look, Wall Street ultimately is people, right? And so all these people, they go, hey, our guy got elected, the letter R guy got elected. That means good stuff for us. And so, you know, they trade on that, and everybody looks at it and they all pile in. But you know, if and when they realize that, you know, this is artificial, this is just based on us being over exuberant in the short term, you know, those gains will be peeled back. So TBD as far as whether that was just a little short-term shot in the arm, or if Wall Street is going to continue it's the bull run it's been on since 2008.
So that's my question. They're all exuberant because of the president-elect coming into office, right? But did I miss something the last 48 months when we've gone from 19,000 to 43,000 on the stock market, from 9% to 2.1% inflation, and a bunch of other dynamics I could mention over the last, like I said, 48 months? What?
Yeah. You're not missing anything. Well, here's your problem, Larry, and this is a problem you have to work on. But you're looking at data, all right?
Yeah, I don't.
That's You know, that's not what the vast majority of human adult voters in this country are looking at. They look here, and they were looking at it. Look, you're gonna get me going here, and it's not gonna be pretty, and then someone's gonna cancel me. But because you know, look, all right. Stop myself. Okay. So look, despite the fact that 48 months ago we were all locked down and we didn't have a vaccine, and you know, the world was completely topsy-turvy in turmoil, you know, the fact is that we all had more I don't know if someone's saying some. You know, most of us had more money in our pockets at that point because we didn't have anywhere to spend it. And you know, there was all this money got injected into the economy. And then some time has passed and the world has gotten back to more of a normal scenario. And people are going, huh, all my savings is gone because I kept spending the way I was spending when I had, all that money, that much more money. And so it really is, in my opinion, you know, among many, many factors, it has to do with the prevailing circumstances and people's emotions and feelings. That can be the only explanation, because otherwise, you know, you and I are seeing the same thing everyone else is seeing.
Well, not everyone, because he won the popular vote by a lot.
Yep.
So not everyone. And there was a huge red tsunami. Regardless of what anyone wants to say, that's the facts, folks. We can't turn away from the facts wherever they pop up. Now, a friend of mine, Petey Fish here, said a possible run-up on the stock market was a lot of money on the sidelines that was deleveraged and came off the sidelines, came into the market. I believe that's what he's saying. So, you know, that could be a reason for it too.
Sure.
But yeah, it's like, you know, it just makes me wonder because, you know, the economy, no, including the Wall Street Journal, nobody is not saying that whoever the president-elect was going to be coming into this time now is coming in to a rocking economy. Is coming into a robust economy. Yes, not everybody is partaking in the robustness, if you will, but a good portion of people out there, and you know, consumer confidence is up. People bitch and complain about inflation. However, consumer spending is up. So there's a lot of divergent numbers that are, you know, butting up against one another that just simply do not make any sense at all, not to me.
Well, you know, the only thing that I can think of to connect it all up is, you know, so you look at all the macroeconomic indicators, you look at GDP, you look at unemployment, you know, PPI, you know, all of those ones, and they all seem to be pointing in the direction that you're saying. But, you know, then there's sort of you look a little closer and you see that most of the Dow Jones is or S&P, whichever is experiencing these increases based on, you know, like 7 or 8 stocks, right? And everyone else is kind of treading water at best. So where I'm going with that is income inequality, right? So if GDP is increasing by, you know, 3%, that's a good year, generally speaking. There, you know, at least that's what they would consider that a good year. If most of that money is going in the pockets of the wealthiest people, the rest of the 99.5% of people are going to be like, I don't get it. Where is mine? And I think that was a big part of what we just saw, is that I ain't getting mine. I don't care what your numbers say. I was never good at math, I'm not interested. The only numbers I'm interested in are my bank account balances, and they ain't where I want them to be.
How much do you think, you know, a lot of people are pointing to this Joe Rogan interview that Trump did for 3 hours, which I think is ridiculous. You know, I don't want to hear anyone talk for 3 hours, least of all Joe Rogan and whoever the hell else he has. I don't care who it is, Harris, Barack,
nobody,
Trump, anybody. I do not need to hear you talk for 3 hours ever. So was that a mistake for her not to go on and just acquiesce? Because apparently there were about 38 million people that tuned into that, most of them younger voters. And I'm just curious, was that a mistake? Or
would it have been better? Look, we can Monday morning quarterback that all day long. I mean, you know, was it a mistake? Apparently it did sway some people. So to that end, if whatever she did instead did not provide as much value as taking the 3 hours to go sit down with him, then yeah, I suppose from that standpoint, you would view that as a mistake. I don't. The answer is I don't know. There's no data as far as I'm aware that would show you one way or the other. But you ultimately there's only 24 hours in every day, and you know they made a strategic decision to do something else opposed to sit down with Joe Rogan. And you know, I guess that had some influence, which is you know. Another disturbing thing about this country that I've just learned recently.
Yeah, it's crazy because the littlest things can turn an election now on a dime. I don't think it has a lot to do with substance, but you know, here's the bottom line. In this country, at the end of a presidential election, you're going to have 50% of the people are going to be happy as hell, and 50% of the people are going to start day drinking. And that's the way it is in this. I know that's pineapple juice. Go ahead.
It's green tea with lemonade, but don't think I didn't think about putting a little dash of vodka in it.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, so I don't know. It's just there. Like I said earlier, there are so many divergent numbers that butt up against one another. And here's the other thing. Just in terms of a comment on this election, America does not want a female president. Get over it. We don't want a female president. In this, at least enough people in this country do not want to be. I think personally, I think gender had a lot to do with. And I could be wrong. I don't know. I mean, I'm taking stabs in the dark here. I don't know.
Larry, I wish I could disagree with you about that because it's what I'm hearing you say is just your observation. I don't think that your opinion is that we shouldn't have a female president. I think that the voters have spoken. I was talking about this with my wife last night, and I told her a little anecdote that really sort of is still ringing in my ears. I was sitting at a real estate closing with a client back in July. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the election, and you know, we're both, you know, enthusiastic about Kamala. And you know, I said one thing, and this has always been sort of, you know, bugging me, and I was convinced that I was overreacting, but now I think that I was not overreacting, and that is I don't necessarily trust the American public to not be sexist. And what my client said to me is, yeah, you know, my late husband, he would say things like, you know, I just don't like, I can't stand her, the way she talks, or I can't stand hearing her talk. I think the men in this country have a real mommy issue problem. And, you know, when they hear a woman in an authoritative position talk, it triggers something in them. And so, you know, I was convinced that, you know, maybe it was just the Hillary thing, because we all know going back to the 90s how polarizing Bill was, and she had all of that baggage dating all the way back to his presidency, and that's what I used to convince myself that I was overreacting to the possibility. But yeah, I hate that I feel that I was right about that, because it disgusts me that is the case.
Listen, I'm going to agree with you on that, and I'm sure there's people watching, listening that may not agree with us on that. The reality of it is that, look, we all have opinions, but the last two women that were probably the two most qualified presidential candidates that have ever run for office, the last two women.
Seriously.
And they got Trump. Well, Hillary didn't. She won the popular vote. But I got to tell you, I was shocked that the Republican candidate won the popular vote by as much as he did. I was blown away by that.
Yeah, It's disappointing, and it's not based on qualifications. Let's be honest. You know, you look at both of their CVs, and you know, if you were hiring someone for a role at your company, there's only one obvious choice as to who you would hire, unless you're hiring for president, apparently. So it has to be something else, right? And you know, I think it's, you know, a number of factors. I think the sexism factor, I think the racism factor was also there, and I think that people. You know, they compared their bank balance on November 5th, 2020, to their bank balance on November 5th, 2024, and they punished the candidate with the D next to their name because the second one is lower than the first one.
And is it though? In most cases,
I can tell you, mine's not. you know, I, and you know. What else can I say? I mean, you know, the last 4 years have been good to me. And what else is there to say?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all pretty perplexing, but the point I wanted to make more than anything about Wall Street is that the initial reaction is a hit to Main Street and another success for Wall Street. And I'm happy when Wall Street is up. That's awesome. But if it's at the expense of Main Street, then that's not good, because at some point that will affect Wall Street. My take only.
Well, it has to, right? And if you know, the economy only works when all boats are rising, right? There is only so much that the top 0.5% can do to prop up the macroeconomic indicators. And at a certain point, they need the rest of us. They need the rest of us to go and do our 9-to-5s and all that good stuff. And yeah. You know, I can start going down some really dark conspiracy you know, paths, but I'll save that for my other podcast, Conspiracy Theorists Weekly.
Yeah. I, you know what? I'm not getting into conspiracies, because I could literally do a podcast on conspiracies. It's insane.
Sounds like we've got a new idea for a podcast.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I'm sure it's out there. But a couple things I want to hit on. So early voters, those who voted early, were polled. And one of the things that was number one on their list of concerns was housing affordability. 38% of early voters said housing affordability was the number one thing on their checklist when it came to, and most of the voters, it seemingly, well, I'm hoping it was a split thing, but most that said that voted for Harris. And I think a lot of that had to do with that $25,000 she was talking about, first-time homeowner, which I didn't necessarily agree with. But because my thing is that, and I'm trying to figure this out, what is Donald Trump going, and the Republican administration, and they're going to have control of everything. They're going to have control of the House, the Senate, and the executive branch. So no excuses. What are they going to do to fix? I know what you're thinking. What are they going to do to fix the bond, not the bond market, but the housing affordability issue? What are they going to do?
Not what are they going to do? A goddamn thing. Okay. Look, housing affordability is only a problem if you're buying a house. If you own a house, housing affordability is not a problem. It is a feature instead of a bug. So if you own real estate and the real estate continues to appreciate and you're happy, you're just like, you know, it's the reason, it's the whole foundation for NIMBYism in general, is that, look, I got mine. Stay the hell out of my neighborhood with all your new housing. That's going to tamp down my appreciation. You know, so I think that's part of it, is that, you know, pe- people like it. I remember the mid-2000s, people were so excited about all of the rapid appreciation of their homes. And I'm not trying to suggest that we're going down that path, but you know, I do remember just how excited people were when they saw how much their home increased in value over a relatively short period of time. So, you know, if you're talking strictly to young people, and I would suggest that campaigning, spending a lot of your campaign efforts and resources campaigning toward young people is a bit of an error, because they're not just statistically likely to vote as much as older people.
I'm going to argue that point. At this point, I'm going to argue that point, because I think that's what gave him a huge victory. One of the things was the younger skewed voter fell on the Republican side.
Well, younger men did. There was very much a gender gap on that one. I think that a lot of that goes back to our earlier point of, you know, having mommy issues. I'm sorry. It's just the American public has demonstrated its disdain for a woman who is in a position of authority twice now.
Yeah.
And you know, again, that's not based on my feelings. The data is there. It's been laid bare.
I think there might be one woman that could potentially get elected, but I'm not even sure. And I'm not going to invoke the old word, because it's just going to piss people off if I start bringing that up again. But I think she's the only one that could potentially win a presidential election. I don't see any other woman out there that can do that. I don't know.
Time will tell. You know, the Democratic Party is going to have some really, really introspective conversations with itself about, you know, where do we go from here? Who do we want to turn to as far as to lead us going forward? Because, it's been determined that Biden's too old. Whether Kamala is a viable candidate going forward is not clear to me. Is it Pritzker? Is it Newsom? Is it someone else? Jeff Jackson in North Carolina is popular. He's going to be busy as the AG there. Are there other who are going to be the fresh faces?
You know, what about John Kasich in I forget where he's in, Kansas or somewhere Dorothy is. I forget where he's out of, but Kasich is a very middle of the road Republican. I don't agree with him on everything, but I will tell you, he's a level-headed guy that doesn't let the party push him around. And it might be someone like that.
Well, if you're talking about on the Republican side, you know, that to me, you know, I've not given it too much thought, but, you know, if we're going to think out loud about it, it will be interesting to see, you know, there's the current leader of the Republican Party. I mean, there's an expiration date on him. I don't know what it is, but, you know, he's, what is he, 78, 79 years old?
Yeah.
Are
you talking about Trump or McConnell?
Well, McConnell, he sort of got sidelined by Trump.
Where's that going? Where's that going? And how's that going to affect policy?
Well, here's what I'm wondering out loud. As far as, you know, this will be the swan song of, you know, the cult leader that is Donald Trump. Whether or not he's able to exert influence behind the scenes after he's done with this second term, assuming we don't have anything completely catastrophic, like, you know, wiping out the 2-year term limit. But even so, he's going to be 82 years old. There just isn't that much time left for him to be, you know, any kind of effective leader. So, right. So where does the Republican Party go next? Do they back away from MAGA or do they double down? Is this Project 25 thing going to get, you know, completely implemented and we're going to gut the federal government and, you know, it'll just be a mere shadow of itself? And, you know, these are questions that, you know, are going to have to be answered because the people that are setting the wheels in motion on this thing are not going to be around to see it to its logical conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take a 30-second break. When we come back, though, I want to talk about what, you know, some of the policies that are being discussed are going to have an impact, not only on the housing market, but on life in general in America for a lot of people. And we want to talk about that. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Welcome back to Real Estate Radio, sponsored in part by TrustedAgentUSA.com, the ultimate real estate matchmaker, saving you thousands. Now back to Larry, the real estate therapist.
All right, everybody, we're back and we're talking about how the election is going to affect markets going forward, specifically the real estate market, but also just markets in general. So some of the things we've talked about are interest rates and how are those being affected currently by the thought of potential tariffs. How is that going to affect home buyers? How's that going to affect home sellers? If interest rates go up to 8%, no one sitting on a 3% mortgage is going to, or 2% or 4% mortgage, or 5% for that matter, is going to be looking at selling their house and getting another home because they're not going to jump from 3 or 4% even to 8%.
Well, they're going to have a hard time doing that because effectively they'll be cutting their spending power in half. And it's not feasible to do that if you're trying to move up to the next rung on the property ladder because you need more space or you need something else. The adjustment in interest rates is going to make things difficult. Now, you know, we've had high interest rates, high mortgage rates before. And we somehow made it work, you know, whether it's through sellers paying for buy downs. You know, I often say if you want to see what the future has in store for sellers, take a look at the kinds of things that home builders are offering in terms of incentives and financing and whatnot, because, you know, above anything else, have to move that inventory they have as quickly as possible because they know paying interest is not a good, you know, the more interest they pay, the less profit they make. And they're not using their own cash to build those homes. And some of the things I've seen offered by home builders are steep buy downs. We're talking about, you know, $25,000 toward buying someone's interest rate down, and in that way they're able to move inventory. Now, you know, there are some unique aspects of new construction that allow them to do that, where it's not necessarily feasible at that magnitude to do that in the existing home market. Mm-hmm. But I could certainly see sellers if the market attains more equilibrium, I could certainly see sellers starting to offer, you know, I'll pay $5,000 toward, you know, buying down your interest rate or different things. So the market, you know, there's enough clever people that the market will adapt to those higher interest rates, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I often will suggest to sellers in a market like this that one thing you can do is buy down an interest rate. Do a 2-1 buy down, do a 3-1 buy down. That's gonna really speak to buyers when they're out there looking for a home, but are kind of put in this box because of interest rates. Now, one thing we haven't talked about is, so, you know, there's a lot of talk about these dystopian policies that are going to be coming into play here if Trump were to get elected. And he, now that he's elected, you know, everybody has, or a lot of people have taken a look at Project 2025. They have heard a lot about all this stuff. And I'm wondering if, just in anticipation of what could potentially be coming down the pike, is that in and of itself going to stifle the real estate market? Because nobody's going to want to make these big moves, and then down the road, somebody starts, kicking 13 million people out of the country, and we have deportation camps, and, you know, Robert F. Kennedy is doing some crazy stuff.
And there's so much. It's like we don't have enough time to talk about all of it.
Exactly. Is that going to stifle people from actually making any kind of move?
Well, probably. You know, that's I think the easiest way to answer that question, because I think that when people, you know, stability is something that we all crave, you know, whether it's just in general, you know, without elaborating, I think it goes without saying that stability, if you're feeling instability, your likelihood of making a big risky decision is pretty low. And so to the extent that we have instability in this country, just based on some policies that are disruptive to, you know, many, many vulnerable people's lives, or whatever it is, I think that will stifle economic activity to a certain extent, because people are, they're gonna start, you know, circling the wagons. You know, you're gonna look at that and you're gonna go, I need to have more savings. What does that mean, for my likelihood of buying a house? Not that good, because usually you drain your savings when you buy a house. So, you know, I think that what you just said, I think is likely if a lot of these policies are implemented, and it destabilizes people in their lives.
What if, I don't mean to interrupt you, but what if, let's say, before these policies are ever implemented, just in anticipation of these policies, just like the bond market in anticipation of potential tariffs is, you know, not doing great, but just in anticipation of these policies, that in and of itself may stop things cold.
Perhaps I think there will be some people that will take a look at the potential of instability, and they may say, you know what, I need to stay where I'm at. I need to stay put. I think you will also see some migration patterns that have already started after Roe v. Wade was overturned. There are more than a few people. There are a lot of places in this country where our most vulnerable people are being targeted for, you know, withholding the medical care they need, targeted for just who they are. And you've already seen people, let's say you live in, I'm just going to call out Tennessee, because they're one of those places. You see people, and I don't have stats on this, but anecdotally, I can't tell you how many times I've seen posts on like the Illinois subreddit where people are like, hey, I gotta get out of this red state. I mean, people are moving out of the Missouri side of St. Louis into the Illinois side. I mean, that's happening on a regular basis, because it's much more in line with affirming people's identities, whereas in the redder states, the identity that you're effectively what's wanted in those places is to force an identity on people that works for enough people that they just say, look, you've got to be like us. And they're like, I can't. It's not how I was made. That's not how human nature works. And so those people are leaving and they're going to places like Illinois. They're going to places like, you know, you name it, whatever deep blue state you want to find, you know, that those migration patterns are going to accelerate, in my opinion. There are plenty of places here in this state where you can find affordable housing. It may not be in the hotter Chicago neighborhoods or in Ashishi, North Shore suburb, but you know, you go to Peoria, you go to, you know, if you want a smaller town atmosphere, Galesburg, you know, you name it. I think you're going to see a lot of people go, you know, I'm not necessarily interested in what Chicago has to offer per se, because you know Chicago is you know it's its own, we're our own thing, man. Yeah. But you know, any one of our smaller metropolitan areas here in Illinois, you know, would be suitable for most anyone.
So since you jumped on, you know, there's a lot of affordable areas in Illinois. One of the hottest areas in the country, home buying markets, is Rockford. And why is that?
Interesting.
It's interesting. I thought it was interesting too. But so Rockford is like number four in terms of one of the hottest markets, according to realtor.whatever. They're one of the hottest markets. Now, the median price in Rockford is like $220,000. So what does that tell you? First-time home buyers, these markets that are really hot right now are first-time home buyer markets, because there are shrinking availability of first-time home buyer markets. You know, there really is.
Sure. And why is that? It's because that, you know, builders can't build in a metropolitan area like Chicago. You can't profitably build affordable housing here. It's just not feasible.
Why is that?
Yeah, cost of building materials, cost of building permits, you know, all of the friction that you know, between, you know, the hard costs like labor, building materials, and the soft costs like, you know, having to make real good friends with the local building inspector. You know,
in Chicago, no.
I mean, I love Chicago, man, but we got our problems just like everywhere else. You know, it just so happens to be that the good outweighs the bad by a considerable amount. But you know, I've been talking about this for a while. You know, people's needs, you know, they are what they are, and they will start to make decisions. You know, yes, do some people want to live in a fantastic McMansion up in Glencoe? I suppose so, yeah. Or out in Naperville, you know, all the rich folks out there. But not everyone can make that work, and so they'll compromise. They might move out to Oswego. They might move out to, I don't know, what's even farther, Sugar Grove. You know, and so some of these decisions start to be made, and they go, you know, we have to make some compromises because, you know, we can't afford exactly what we want. And I think that's always been the case, to be honest. You know,
I agree. I think especially first time home buyers, like my sister, and you know, she's owned several houses now, they're older, but when they first looked for a home, they just moved farther and farther out until they could find what they wanted. And at that time it was Crystal Lake. And so when they bought their first home in Crystal Lake, they went, you know, we were living in Des Plaines at the time, and they would have liked to have moved there, but prices weren't allowing them to buy a single family home there. So they moved out to, they kept moving their boundaries out, settled on Crystal Lake because they have great schools, great community, you know, nice community. But that's where they could find the amount of house they wanted for the amount of money they had. And I think that's how a lot of first-time home buyers, you know, do it.
I'll tell you my own first time home buyer story. I was moving out to the northwest suburbs to take a job out in we'll call it Crystal Lake. It was Cary, but not everyone's going to be familiar with all of the little rinky-dink suburbs out that way. Would I have liked to buy a place in Schaumburg? Yeah, it would have been more convenient for my lifestyle and for a lot of things, but the affordability wasn't there for me. So I ended up buying a townhouse out in Elgin instead. So, you know, those decisions get made. And it's, I think that's that part of it is that, you know, sometimes you can't get everything you want. I think there was a famous rock band that said something to that effect.
That is my favorite rock band, by the way. My favorite guitar god of all time, bar none.
They say you're either a Rolling Stones or a Beatles guy, and I have to say I'm a Beatles guy, but I can appreciate Rolling Stones.
Yeah. So me and my an associate of mine, Michael Lafito, we have this thing that we always use, and that is life drives real estate. So people aren't going to put everything on hold. If they have to do something, they're going to do it. You know, they're going to make that move if they have to, regardless of interest rates. You know, even at 8%, let's face it, we know of years way back in the day, and maybe not that far back, when interest rates were 11%, 13%. If you go all the way back, they were 17%, and people were still buying homes. So life moves real estate. And, you know, that's just how it works, I think, in the long run with everybody.
In the long run. Yeah. I've said on a number of occasions that I don't necessarily think that it's the interest rate number strictly is what people are having such a hard time with, because interest rates, there's only one thing that's constant about interest rates, and is that they are going to continue to change. What was so, I think, shocking and jarring, and what still has people on tilt about, is how quickly that it happened. And I think it was a unique thing, a unique sequence of events that led to all of that happening. And, you know, the interest rates we're at right now appear to be here to stay for the short and medium term.
100%.
And so, you know, get used to this as the norm and act accordingly.
I'll just add a caveat to that. And that is, they appear to be staying at around 7% now, but that could change if some things change. I mean, they could tick up if some of these policies get instituted and, you know, they affect the economy like some people say they might. And let's look at one of them now, and let's talk about the mass deportation policy that Stephen Miller is so excited about doing. And
yeah, he's a troll.
No, trust me. I don't even want to go with him, get into him too much. He's part of the tribe, and I'm going to get all pissed off if I start talking.
It's dark, man.
Voldemort looks like Snow White compared to him.
And, so, I hate the ad hominem attacks, but it's hard not to, because he is that distasteful.
What is wrong with him?
I don't know. Someone with like a shade of skin slightly darker than mine yelled at him once. I don't know.
It's crazy. I mean, he's really some of the things he comes up with, some of the things he promotes, and the one thing that they're promoting that they have made, they have pointed the finger at immigrants and our broken immigration policy. By the way, you were president for 4 years. What in hell did you do?
And you also killed the bipartisan legislation that was supposed to come into effect. I mean, it's
$1 trillion bill that would have changed things.
Larry, you and I, once again, we are stuck on the facts, right? We are stuck on the facts. It's the people are way more interested in their feelings, Larry. Feelings, okay? Because the fact is, if you deport, let's use their numbers, between 20 and 25 million people, you are going to crash the economy. And it's you are going to see a 10% reduction in GDP. What do you think that does?
By the way, went up. It went up. I believe 2.8% the GDP.
Right. Like a normal amount.
Exactly. So you know, really.
So we're going to crash the economy by 10%, which would be effectively the equivalent of the Great Depression, which would be great for very wealthy people because they can take that hit. Most of us can't. Okay. So you're going to crash the economy. You are going to at the same time increase the cost of goods because the labor that you will need either won't be available. Okay. So we'll have a shortage of goods, or it'll be so expensive that those goods will increase in their cost. So crash the economy, that sucks. Increase the cost of goods at the same time, also not good. You know, it's the opposite of any rational person's idea of how to grow an economy. And you know, people think, well, shoot, if we get rid of all those people, all these houses will magically become available. And it's like, how?
If that's their go-to logic, that's insane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and think, okay, so you know that's one side of the equation, but if you are an owner of real estate and you crash rents by deporting 20 to 25 million people, what does that do to your investment? It's going to crash the value of your investment. You're going to go into foreclosure. I mean, there is nothing but shrinking the population has only bad effects. It has only bad effects. On top, you know, here's another one. You're going to have a demographic problem in the future if you do all this. Ask China about its one-child plan. They got major, major problems in China because of the fact that they're so top-heavy with people who are past working age or about to retire, and they don't have the people, the young people, to step in and do the heavy lifting that an economy needs. Russia's been suffering that since World War II and even before. So you're gonna introduce, in addition to all the rest of it, a demographic problem. It is nothing but bad, and that's to set aside just the horrific morality behind wrangling up that many people and trying to deport them. It's not physically possible. So what does that mean? I'm not gonna take the next logical step, but you get where I'm going.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, all to me, and again, this isn't about who I voted for, how I feel. I am, frankly, I am not a far left person. I am left center. I am just left center. Let's put it that way. You know, I'm a concealed carry holder. I don't think guns are the problem. I think people are the problem, although I do believe that we got to get these crazy ass M16s and AK-47s and all those off the market completely. There's no reason to have them on the market. So, you know, F you to anybody else that doesn't feel that way, because if you're a hunter, you don't need an AK-47. If you're you don't need these guns. If you want to shoot them, go to the range and shoot them. Go to an open range and shoot them. Have fun. I love it. Do it. But you don't
tell me you're a bad. Tell me you're bad at hunting without telling me you're bad at hunting. If you need an assault rifle for a deer, you just don't. You know. The only thing that someone would say that would make any logical sense that I would even be prepared to believe them is that they would want that for personal protection. And you know, honestly, if I had a gun for personal protection, I'd want a handgun. A long gun is not going to do you much good, personal protection wise.
I'll say this. Although you see people in open carry states like Vegas, literally walking around with, you know, long guns and shit, just to let you know
they have a tiny appendage.
Yeah, we know that. But they literally do that just to incite the police. They'll like open carry, walking by police with strapped with stuff just to piss them off, and not piss them off, but just to be provocative, let's say. I saw that all the time when I was in Vegas.
It gives the same energy as the guy that's blasting his Bluetooth speaker on one of the CTA trains. You know, it's just, look at me. Somebody please come challenge me because I like to fight.
Oh my God. I mean, it's so obnoxious, you know, and So anyway, there's just a ton of stuff in terms of policy that is pointing towards negative results if all those policies get put into play. There's just a ton of things, and
it's concerning. And here, let me say this. Let me try to find some silver lining here.
All right, I'll be right.
It's tough. It's tough. But so here's my most optimistic take on it. And that's saying something. The lying liar lied to get elected, right? He said all of the lies he thought he needed to say that people wanted to hear, so that they would cast their vote for him. And now the question becomes, will he make good on any of those lies?
Yes.
How many of them were lies? Which were lies? And which were, actually statements of intent? And, you know, the thing that we don't know and the thing that causes anxiety is that we won't know until it happens or it doesn't.
Yeah. And he lied. I mean, bottom line is, again, we have to go by data. It sucks. I don't like it. I don't like to have to deal with facts. He lies all the time. He's lied to the people that voted for him forever. And, you know, we haven't even touched on the Affordable Care Act, if he kills that. We haven't, which 60 million people use to be insured.
He's got concepts of a plan, Larry. It's going to be fine.
So we haven't touched on that. We haven't touched on how is all this going to play out on the bigger stage in terms of geopolitics with Europe, with Russia, with Ukraine, with Israel. I mean, there are so many things that are in this.
My heart goes out to every Ukrainian and every Palestinian who is effectively going to have the support that we've provided withdrawn. On that end, I believe him. I believe he's going to do all of that because that is consistent with what he did in his first term.
Is he going to pull out those?
I think he'll talk about it. I don't think he actually will because it wouldn't make any sense to do that. I'm assigning him a trait he doesn't necessarily have, which is sense. But I don't know if it would go that far. But the idea that we will heretofore no longer support Ukraine, no longer he said it himself, he's happy to let Netanyahu finish the job, as he said, which is horrific.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on Israel and all that. That's another whole freaking show.
Yeah, that one's very complicated. There is no side to take that you can say I have an unassailable view on this. So yeah. You know that one is a third rail all day long.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Patrick, after talking with you for about 59 minutes, I feel like crap. And I'm probably, again, I'm going to say, what is it, 12:29 here in Chicago, Chicago Metro. I'm going to work out and start drinking. I think that's the plan today.
Well, speaking of third rails, I'm just under the Roosevelt stop. I there's a couple of third rails I can just go touch and put myself out of my misery.
Hey, before we leave, go ahead. What
the world's going to keep turning.
Yeah.
And you know, the good there's still plenty of good moral people out there who believe in this country. even though my belief has been shook to its core over the past few days. And, you know, if we don't well and truly believe in that, that's when things are going to get really bad. So keep the faith, my friend.
Yeah, you know, that's all we can do, and I will, and I know you will too. And, you know, I hope things work out well for everybody. But how do people get in touch with you if they want another therapy session like this?
Oh, my God. If I don't have a complete mental breakdown, come follow me on social media, where I don't talk about politics at all, to be honest.
Yeah,
because it gets too heated, and, you know, that's, you know, I'm trying to run a business after all. Find me on Instagram, Loftus_law. Find me on TikTok, Loftus Law. I post every day. And if you are interested in real estate content, that's where you go find it.
Yeah. Patrick is an awesome real estate attorney. Get in touch with him. Do you do any other kind of law?
I've niched down. I'm specifically a real estate lawyer. Now that said, you know, if people find me to be a trustworthy sort, I have a broad background in many different areas of law. I can probably give you an idea on a car accident, or, you know, I can lead you in the direction of a talented estate planning lawyer. I've got a big network, and, you know, if you want to find other lawyers who do other kinds of law who have the same similar philosophies and you know, client-centric approaches to the practice of law, then reach out and I will connect you with someone in my carefully curated network.
Awesome. All right, man, have an awesome day, and stay safe out there, stay positive, and we'll talk again soon.
Hang in there, Larry. It's gonna be okay.
It's gonna be okay. All right, I'll see you later.
All right, man.
All right. All right, everybody. That was Patrick Loftus of Loftus Law. You know, he's a real estate attorney. He doesn't dabble in other things. He is specifically a real estate attorney. So if you're looking for a great attorney, give Patrick a call. And it has been awesome having you guys join us today. And we're going to be back next Thursday with another great guest. So be sure to tune in every Thursday, 11:30, and we will see you next Thursday.
Thanks for joining us on Real Estate Radio with your host, Larry Shagman, the real estate therapist and top producing broker. Now go to TrustedAgentUSA.com and save thousands when you sell, buy, or invest. Illinois license number 475-145-795. Tune in next week for the ultimate real estate radio experience.